Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva, Principal for Operation and Quality at Vizient and Practicing Internist. On this episode, we continue our discussion on moving from pandemic to endemic. Joining us is Dr. Maddie McDowell, Senior Principal for Intelligence at Vizient. Maddie, let's get to it. Do lockdowns work?
Great question. And there's been a lot of discussion and debate about it. There was a recent article published from Johns Hopkins that said the lockdowns did not save lives. But there have been other studies to prove the opposite point, that they do save lives. I believe lockdowns work, but they come at a high cost, especially in our country, economically and socially. So countries that did have prolonged lockdown measures and the capability of continuing to give economic support and community support have done really well in terms of mortality. Think of New Zealand. They've reported 25 total deaths in the pandemic. Think of Singapore. When we were doing the SIR modeling for COVID in the early days, we were looking at Wuhan, we were looking at Lombardy, Italy, and we saw that this virus was highly transmissible and very deadly and could overwhelm a health system in a matter of weeks, which it did in those two cities. And then, sure enough, it did it on our soil in New York City. What we found through our modeling was that lockdowns, if they were initiated, sometimes it was only 2 or 3 days earlier. A matter certainly of 7 days could make a difference between having a surge with significantly high mortality rates that overwhelm the health system versus those that could have blunted the curve. So when we looked at San Francisco versus New York, San Francisco did their shelter at home measure a week earlier than their counterparts in terms of the trajectory of COVID than New York City, and they blunted the curve. And we could actually target the dates to see if it would have an effect, a significant logarithmic effect on the number of cases. So lockdowns do work. They helped us in the early stages to press the pause button because our country did not have testing. Unfortunately, the testing that we developed had to be recalled. And if you remember during the lockdown, the only way you could get a test is if you were hospitalized and they thought you had COVID, or if you had been traveling to Wuhan or Lombardy, Italy. So we had no way of knowing who had COVID and the prevalence data in our country. Had we had that, it would have been very helpful to being able to determine where lockdowns should happen and when. As it turned out, we did the entire country at once, which meant there were many places that did not have significant infections that had an unnecessary lockdown. And that was a problem.
So I understand the science, and by doing that, you're actually avoiding spread. I was more concerned with the social effects of the lockdown itself. Just to give you some examples, suicide rates went significantly higher. Overdoses went higher. In fact, a world record higher, over 100,000 that we know that are documented, 30% rise. Obesity is another very good example. The effects on our children because of lack of socialization, even neuromuscular skills were decreased among our younger children. Any thoughts behind that versus a total lockdown?
I think that's a really important point that you have to bring up when you're talking about these lockdowns. So yes, they saved lives. But what we found, especially in our country, was exactly what you said, was a huge cost for our mental health. What I ask, and I'm not an expert here, is why did other countries not experience as grave a cost from the mental health repercussions of lockdowns and the economic repercussions? And my explanation in my mind is that when we did initiate the lockdowns, we didn't do it coordinated with other initiatives that could have supported families and workers economically. And we also have, as we all know, a very limited mental health infrastructure that has not been able to meet the current demands prior to the pandemic. And other countries have more robust mental health infrastructure and access to care than our country does. And so my question for our country is, what could we have done differently during a lockdown to help support people economically and psychologically, mental health as well?
My point is that this is just one of the many dirty little secrets that our industry, healthcare industry, had that maybe the general public didn't realize, but we always knew as active participants. We do episodic care, and preventative and screening is not part of it. And we did not have the public health or even the mental health structure to deal with this. And a lot of it had to do with just a lack of preparedness, if you will, and probably underestimating.
Yes. Oh, I think we both agree that the world was not prepared for COVID, but our country was even less prepared. There was a lot of people in leadership positions that underestimated the impact of this pandemic. And the capitalist markets that we have did not support economically a lockdown. It made it very hard for people to support themselves, to pay their mortgages. We did finally do provide economic support and relief to people, but it came after. I think the lockdowns did prevent another tragedy like we saw saw in New York City, which was an overwhelmed health system, where not only did we see significant mortality from COVID, but we also saw significant higher mortality from non-COVID because the health systems were so overwhelmed.
Right.
I think we prevented that in another city like Chicago, California, cities like Los Angeles and San Francisco, but we also created unanticipated other problems, as we just talked about. So lockdowns, they should be a last resort.
And I like to carry on that in the sense is as we start preparing ourselves from that of a pandemic attitude to that of endemic, that lockdowns may be necessary in a smaller geographical area where you see a spike occurring. And that is a maybe scenario, maybe possibly even extreme, but not so much the entire country, which is what we did the first time around, because frankly, we know a lot more now. Is that a fair statement?
Well, I think it depends what you call a lockdown, how you define it. I don't think we'll ever get back to the shelter in place ever again, because we know now a lot more about this virus. So we know masks work.
Sure.
We didn't have masks. We weren't even quite sure how to contain the virus. So I believe it would be more beefing up social distancing measures. So mask mandates in cities, limits on the number of people in a room in terms of meeting sizes, things like that. Perhaps even some business closures like indoor dining. But it would be different than the shelter in place extreme lockdowns that we had in the early days of the pandemic. And honestly, that they've had for much longer in China and places like that. So I believe it would be much more tailored to the science because we know so much more.
We sure do.
I think it's very exciting, this concept of test and treat that we're going to have going forward, where you could go to a pharmacy, get tested, and get the Paxlovid antiviral medication right then and there if you're positive. That's a huge step towards endemicity.
I couldn't agree more. And also access to further vaccinations or even boosters. We know so much more and we have so much more in our armamentarium to treat things. It is completely different than in the 2020s.
As we see surges, we are much more prepared to, first of all, identify cases with testing, which we did not have, mm-hmm. and then treating them. And then our vaccines have really changed the game in terms of protecting us from severe disease.
Maddie, you and I are not economists, but any comments on what the science has told us on the effects on the economic changes that occurred from the lockdowns?
So again, this is not my area of expertise, but the lockdowns that we did in our country created significant short-term hardship for Americans. And I believe that if we had been more prepared, and the next time, if this ever happens again, we would realize the necessity of putting in some economic safety measures, essentially, for people, which is what other countries did do. Socialist countries, it was much easier for them to do those types of things, to provide that safety net. But we saw people who had businesses that required to be open to maintain their paychecks, their salaries, mm-hmm. to support their families. They saw an abrupt termination of their income. And there was no safety measures put in place at the same time. And so I think that is something that I think this country's learned, that you really do need to tie the two together. I also think closing schools was very hard economically also for working parents, because we had no childcare options because everybody was required to stay at home. And so it's something that we also recognize, that school closures had a huge economic toll on our families. And that was something that went on longer than the stay-at-home measures, right? Closed for much longer in many cases and made it very difficult for parents to work.
Maddie, what about some of the long-term effects socially, even possibly economic in our country that we as healthcare providers need to be aware of? And I would say even have far more empathy with. So I mentioned about the obesity and some of the mental health issues, but long-term, what do you think are going to be some of the effects that we need to be very much aware and be part of our armamentarium?
The mental health crisis in our country is staggering, and it was an obvious problem prior to the pandemic, which, as we just talked about for reasons mentioned before, really was exacerbated during the pandemic due to the stress of the economic stresses, the lack of community and isolation, the fear of the virus itself. So we have seen that mental health issues are impacting many different parts and aspects of our healthcare system and resulting in rising acuity for medical conditions as well. So comorbid, psych, and medical conditions. Mm-hmm. Experts have been sounding this drum for quite some time now that we need increased payment for mental health. We need increased training for mental health specialists, and we need improved access for people to get care sooner. It has to be a priority for our country if we're going to be able to tackle this.
How about within healthcare industry? I have a real concern, and I've gotten feedback in reference to medical training for medical students, nursing students, even physicians in training, where I'm hearing from those that are hiring these physicians straight out of residency or even fellowship that they're just not as prepared due to either just overextension of treatment of COVID or not so much clinical time or even time in the OR.
When we think about medical training for physicians, the third and fourth year of medical school is when they get their boots on the ground training. And if those years coincided with the pandemic, even half of it, their training is going to be diverted and focused on other areas like the pandemic. It'll be significantly disrupted. And when we think of nursing students and others that even have a shorter training period, that training period was disrupted. So they didn't really get the comprehensive training to see the different specialties and different care that was required to really have a more broad view of medicine beyond just infectious disease and the pandemic of COVID. And so it will have implications because these people are now coming out into the world, but we can't go back in time and retrain them. And what we're hearing from our colleagues is that people who have recently graduated during this pandemic period are less prepared, are having challenges with meeting the demands as they go out into their full-time jobs that may be very different from taking care of COVID patients. Tom, what do you think are the solutions for this?
You know, Maddie, that's a great question. And I've been getting the same feedback from our members and even other colleagues about the lack of preparedness among not only our physician colleagues, but nursing, even APPs. I think that the solution is investment in onboarding programs if you don't have one already. And I'm just not talking about a general orientation. This is your EMR, here you are. It's an active mentorship program where there is a dialogue where they can go for seeking additional resources. Also a residency program. At Vizient, we have both an onboarding and we have a residency program that's a nurse residency program that's been going on for years. This is going to be key. I think that this will be key also for the purposes of retention. One thing that also I see coming out of the pandemic that our more seasoned physicians, even nurses, are not wanting to work full-time anymore. Mm-hmm. I see changes going on in hospital medicine where the traditional week on, week off among your more seasoned hospitalists are not going to be seeking that. They're going to be seeking less hours and therefore coming up with new ways, if you will, to look at retraditionalizing shifts. So I think that that's going to be key moving forward.
Yeah. And when you think about it, all of this is happening at a time when the complexity of medicine is increasing. Mm-hmm. So we're reducing training hours to ensure people get proper sleep and quality of life at a time when the complexity of medicine is exponentially increasing.
That's all the time we have for this episode. I want to thank Maddie McDowell for joining us. And if you'd like to contact her, we've posted her email in our resource section. And if you have any additional questioning pertaining to modern practice or simply want to send us your comments, please contact me at our email at modernpracticepodcast.com. And please join us for other Modern Practice Podcasts. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.